You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. All right, and everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really, you know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Like I said, coach our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
Time we're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of them did it again.
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Doesn't sound like you're doing too good over there, Shane. What's got you down this time?
God, what don't have me down? Man, I cannot pick a game. Gambling sucks. Tennessee sucks. It's just, I'm in a bad spot, Mike, you know? I'm in a bad spot right now, but you know, it's college football. It's what I signed up for, and, you know, we're just going to roll with it. There's a lot of season left, so at least hopefully I can make some money. I don't know about my volunteers, but at least I'm hoping that my picks start getting a little bit better here toward the end.
Well, they can't get much worse, Shane, but let's not dwell on that. Let's get into this action. There's a ton of games we got to jump to, and let's start right there with Georgia, the big night game. The Bulldogs defend Athens, win 23-17 over Notre Dame. I don't know about you, Shane. I was pretty shocked by this outcome. I know a lot of Georgia fans excited, obviously, to beat Notre Dame, still undefeated. That's a great win on their resume. But, let's start. Before we really take a deep dive on this game, Shane, we've got to say that this atmosphere was out of this world.
Yeah.
You know, it reminded me a little bit of the Tennessee when they went to Bristol, how awesome that scene was.
Yeah.
Of course, that was a unique setting and, you know, it made it bigger than what it was. But I don't know that I can recall a regular season college football game that was this intense with just the fans and everything going on around it. And I think Georgia fans, not only for, you know, the display they put on, but how much they helped their team, I think they deserve, some recognition.
Dude, this game was electric, man. Like you said, from start to finish, there was not a moment you really wanted to turn off this game because it felt like it could go either way there for a while, which honestly really surprised me. Notre Dame's quarterback is legit, man. I mean, the kid can just do some amazing things, especially with his legs.
Mm-hmm.
And that tight end, man, is like, for a minute, I was like, okay, if you guys just guard him, I think you're going to win this thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and how do you not see this big guy running down the middle of the field? It's like, but I will say this. I think Georgia hasn't been tested until this point. And I should have thought about that when I was talking about the spread and gambling and things like that. This was a true test, man. This felt like a playoff game, man. I ain't going to lie. It just kind of had that buzz to it. And I think Georgia did a lot of growing up Saturday.
Yes, particularly on defense. Like you said, the tight end kind of had his way a little bit there in the game. But I don't think Notre Dame had a first down in the second half until late in the fourth quarter. You know, obviously they had the touchdown drive, and then they they had a little bit of momentum there in the fourth quarter. But I was just kind of shocked that, not that Georgia was shutting them down, but the fact that Georgia had kind of locked him down, held him to 46 rushing yards, and yet this was a six-point game, and there was an opportunity. Notre Dame had the ball last, You know, it would have been a miracle, but they had an opportunity to steal this game. I know it's a top, you know, everyone keeps coming at me because I dropped Georgia a little bit in my power rankings. How do you do that when you beat a top 10 team? I think it's because you did it at home. I think the ultimate factor was your home crowd. And when you shut down Notre Dame like this, and it's still, you know, it went down to the final, you know, give Georgia all the credit in the world for winning it. But I just was not very impressed by this win. I thought, you know, we obviously thought they were going to roll in this game. They never really got the ground game going. And Jake Fromm, I mean, my God, he was like Mr. Dink and Dunk in this one.
Yeah.
Obviously, not. It's you won. You won a big game. Take credit for it. But I was just a little surprised at how tough this one was for Georgia.
I'm with you, man. The running game seemed to be lopsided. You know, it felt like Georgia there toward the end was, you know what, honestly, it felt like? It felt like Notre Dame just wasn't deep, you know? Mm-hmm. And at the start, their ones were just as competitive as Georgia's ones. But Georgia was able to replenish and get, you know, get some youth in there. And I think that paid off toward the end, especially when you start seeing some of those, like Swift with that daggone run. He's diving over people and everything. I mean, the running game got going. And the fact that Georgia was able to shut down Notre Dame, I think that was, like, if I'm going to take anything positive from this game, was just how effective they were in stopping the run. Because if you can do that, man, if you can make teams one-dimensional, 99% of the time, you're going to win. So that if I'm looking for the silver lining here, was the defense is better than I thought they were. And the offense still needs to work on some stuff, man. Those wide receivers, it's pretty obvious that they're not there yet, man. Now, it just felt like the chemistry was off with Fromm. When he did, you know, Cager had that amazing catch. But there were some times that it just felt like they weren't on the same page, man.
Mm-hmm. And I think if you're Georgia, you also got to look at it like this, Shane. On the SEC schedule that they've got remaining, obviously they don't play Alabama or LSU in the regular season. Now, they do get Texas A&M late in the year. But I don't know if they're going to face a quarterback of this caliber outside of maybe Kelly Bryant's looked really good. But outside of that, I don't know if they're going to get a guy quite as good as this Notre Dame quarterback, the performance he put up. And they looked – I thought the defense looked outstanding there in the second half.
You know, Georgia got banged up there at times of the game, you know, and it really sucks, especially when the line is, you know – when you Georgia, we always give them the benefit of the doubt that they're so deep at that, but – you know, when you got so many moving pieces, and they've had to do that here the last 2 weeks, right. it's going to affect the running game, and it's going to affect the passing game. And I really just think that they weren't able to get that continuity going until the end. But, you know, kudos to Notre Dame, man. They hung in there. And like you said, this thing came down to the last drive. And if things, who knows, the cards could have fell a different way, man.
Mm-hmm. Any surprise by you, Shane, that late in that game, Kirby Smart – what was it, 4th and 1, and he decided to punt? We could have ran it. Any surprise that he didn't? Now, obviously, it worked off. They won the game, but I was pretty surprised they didn't lean on that offensive line there.
Yeah, I do. Just as much as they've touted this offensive line, and I can imagine, I mean, they were pushing Notre Dame around when they had to, that they didn't go for it. I think the biggest surprise was, of course, no shocker to Gary there. He was pumped up when they – went for it, kicked that field goal, you know, and he's like, hey, they could have been up this, you know. But I think that, I don't know. I think Kirby just, his defense was doing so well. I just think that he knew that he felt confident, I think, in just getting the points where he can and just relying on this defense.
All right, Shane, well, let's kick it over to Kirby Smart after this game. He had a lot of big things to say, obviously, and I focused this one on him crediting his home fans for their outstanding showing, and on his team just continuing to respond to the challenge and just keep, you know, chopping that wood, so to speak, and on the fact that his team is built for games like this, and they really wore Notre Dame down in the second half, and that was something Kirby Smart hit on here.
What an incredible atmosphere, and it seems like we say the same thing over and over each time we come in here, but our fans are by far the best in the country, and this is why you come to UGA.
when you get an opportunity to play in an atmosphere like that, in an environment like that, it was really incredible. You don't really know what's inside you in life or football till you get tested. And I thought we got tested tonight. We found out a lot about our team. We're far from perfect, and we got to get a lot better. But they'll fight you, man. They'll fight you over and over again. And, well, like I said, I think when you get tested, you find out something about yourself inside. You look inside yourself when you're getting tested, and there's some guys that had to look inside themselves. So they had not been tested like that. And how are they going to respond? And they came out fighting. You know, we showed the guys a Matt Hughes, Frank Trigg UFC fight. And in the end of the fight, he says, you know, you're never out of the fight. You're never out of the fight. He came back from having been down and almost in a submission position, and he just said, you're never out of the fight. And that's what we talked about all week. We were never out of the fight. And then at halftime, we knew we weren't out of the fight. The whole game, our kids kept saying, you're never out of the fight. Well, I think that's what we want to be. We want to be a dominant team in the fourth quarter. We want to try to break people's will. We want to be able to take over the line of scrimmage, which at the end of the day, when you look at the rushing yards, we won the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was they didn't run the ball real well on us in 152 to 46. So that's what this team's built on. Now, we've got to be able to do other things, and it keeps coming back to that. But I think we're built to do that.
All right, Shane, so it's going to be a while before Georgia's probably tested in a game like this, and they're not going to play in a game of this magnitude, I wouldn't think, until the SEC championship game, if they make it, which certainly we suspect they will. So this is kind of – it's just weird that it was a couple weeks into the season. You almost had this – I don't want to call it a Super Bowl because it's not that big, but basically the biggest game on your schedule, month into the season – and the game lived up to the hype. The atmosphere lived up to the hype. And now, well, thankfully, Georgia's got 2 weeks to come off it, because I think there would be some letdown factor if they had to play next week. Yeah. Thoughts on what Kirby had to say here, just his team kind of taking control. And you know, obviously, he noted the incredible atmosphere from this one.
Dude, that's what Georgia is, man. They're big, they're physical, they're dominant, and they're going to wear you out. And they don't want to do it with Fromm's arm. You know, they want to do it with these multitude of running backs that they have and the offensive line that they have. And they want to get a lead, and they want to sit on it and just chew that clock up. That's what Georgia's about. And, you know, I think Kirby was a little upset that they weren't able to get that 10, 15, 20-point lead until the third quarter. You know what I'm saying? And I think it changed a little bit of the game script, you know. But kudos to the Dogs, man. They stayed true to what they are, and it came out positive there at the end.
And one final thought I have on this game, Shane, obviously we don't know the plays that were called, but I'm going to put a lot of, I don't know if you want to say heat, but this was, like you said, the first test Georgia got. And I don't think the offensive coordinator, James Coley, from what I saw, I don't think he really called that great a game. I think he's got to step it up as Georgia gets into the SEC play, obviously. And I just don't think they're going to get it done quite like this. I think he's got to do a better job calling the game.
Yeah, it felt like there was no, I don't know, it felt almost like there was no adjustment toward the start of this game. Mm-hmm. And like they had a game plan. They were going to stick to it, and they weren't going to change what they came into this game thinking they were going to be able to do. And when they were not able to move the ball as efficient against Notre Dame, I think, you know, things had some adjustments needed to be made, and it felt like we didn't get those adjustments till late in the third quarter.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to College Station. This is the second game. I thought this was kind of the second most important result of the day, because obviously Auburn went on the road, won 28-20, and it was not even as close as that final score would indicate. Auburn kind of comes out here, scores the first big touchdown of the day on the Anthony Schwartz sweep play there. I mean, how do you lose sight of that guy? He's only the fastest player in the nation here. But I want to give a ton of credit to Gus Malzahn. I thought he drew up a masterful game plan here against a very good Aggies defense, but they had their numbers, I mean, time and time again. And I think the main takeaway for me, you know, we've keep talking about this defense, Shane. They showed out. I know Kellen Mond didn't have a great day, but I think that had more to do, a lot of people piling on him probably in College Station, but I think that had more to do with the Auburn defense just never giving him a pocket. He was always kind of rattled or running. And one thing, this, you know, this doesn't get glorified enough, but college football has become a game where you get your playmakers the ball in space, and A&M was able to do that, but Auburn seemingly made the tackle every single time. And just tackling is almost like a lost art, but this Auburn crew, they've got it down. And they, I mean, A&M had to score 17 points in the fourth quarter to make this game look respectable. I was just kind of blown away by how Auburn was able to play defense and just give an all-around effort. I was just completely impressed by Auburn here.
Yeah, and if you didn't watch this game, you could look at a box score and say, well, how did Texas A&M not win this thing? They had a lot more yards, you know what I'm saying? And it felt like Auburn bended at times, but they did not break. You know, they when they needed a stop, they got the stop. They made Texas A&M get one-dimensional. There was absolutely no rushing attack from the Aggies, and you can't do that, man. You can't rely just on Mon. Mon's a great quarterback, but there's no reason he should throw 50 times in one game. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This needed to be a balanced attack. And honestly, when I look at Auburn's side of the ball, as far as offense, they were balanced. They didn't make Bo do something that Bo didn't need to do. You know what I'm saying? They didn't put the game on his shoulders. They just kind of, I don't know, they steered the course. And as much shit as I gave Auburn, man, I got to say, they look pretty damn good at times. This could be one of the best teams in the nation. I mean, I that's no joke right now. I mean, Texas A&M's not an easy feat. And when I got to the end of this game, I honestly felt like Auburn outcoached Texas A&M, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's jump there, Shane, because I think I agree with you 100%. And that's something Gus Malzahn was asked about during his postgame presser. All right, so here's Gus Malzahn, Shay, talking about that Anthony Schwartz run. I believe it was a 57-yarder on the play call of the Joey Gatewood touchdown. I thought that was genius. Kind of saw that one coming, but obviously the Aggies didn't. You knew they were going to Joey Gatewood was going to hit somebody with a pass at some time. You know, that final drive of the late in the game in the fourth quarter, Auburn, all they did was run down the Aggies' throats. They knew it was coming. Yeah. They could not stop it. This is something we've seen time and time again from Auburn's offensive line. They're imposing their will on opponents, and I just never saw it coming against this A&M team. I thought, you know, this would be their match, but it wasn't. And then finally here, this was kind of big here on Bo Nix, his first road appearance. This is something we also hit on all week, and Gus Malzahn had nothing but big things to say here.
Yeah, so we really felt strong that they were going to blitz us and they were going to put pressure on Bo. And so strategically, we were going to get the ball on the perimeter. And sure enough, on that reverse, they did exactly that. We got the ball on the perimeter. We had another perimeter run that they blitzed us. And then they blitzed us on the Wildcat naked that Joey made, and so that kind of changed the game. Then they started playing a little bit more base, and they're a good defense. As a matter of fact, they're a really good defense, and for us to have that many rushing yards was says a lot about our offensive line, our running backs, and our quarterback.
Gus talked about keeping the ball for 12 plays, scoring in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that was a drive, a type of drive that wins the game on the road. Man, that was the best drive we've had the whole season, I felt like, because they knew we were probably running, and we were able just to methodically run the ball. And I don't know if we threw it, maybe, I don't know if we threw it on that deal or not, but one time. And that's the type of drives that win football games on the road. So, you know, our team's growing up. We're still not there, but our team is growing up, and you know, they're getting more confidence. And I'll say this, we talked about we had to play our best game to have a chance to win here. And we played our best game today, so that's encouraging for the future. He's got something special to him. He's not your normal freshman. We knew that when we recruited him. One thing that I like is the moment ain't too big for him. I mean, it's not even close. And he's real tough on himself, but what I like, he articulates on the sideline what he sees, what he likes. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun to have him around in the future, I'll tell you that.
All right, Shane, so the future is bright. I think Gus Malzahn's right. I mean, this team just continues to get better week in and week out. And I think you may have already answered this, Shane, but I was going to ask you this. I mean, this was, to me, Like you said, a lot of people are going to look at this box score, the final score, and not be that impressed or as impressed as I'm about to say it. But this, to me, was like a championship performance. And if they continue to progress, I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship, but I think this team is capable of doing that if they just keep getting better and just sticking to their strengths here.
Yeah, absolutely, man, because they have I'm old school. I do think defense wins championships, and because if you do got a great defense and you're able to stay in any ball game, then you're not asking that much from your offense. You know, if you flipped the side here to Texas A&M, they were relying way too much on Kellen Mond's arm, which you shouldn't do. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This defense had opportunities, but the thing that I like about Auburn is they knew what they had to do. They had to get this crowd out of it, and they did it. The opening drive, they go four plays for 75 yards and get the touchdown, and that crowd shut up quick. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think kudos to Auburn for being aggressive. I mean, you know, the Schwartz run itself was just a kind of unusual play. I'm sure that Gus didn't want to use all season long. I think he was saving it for this game. And, of course, it helps that Schwartz was healthy. But, you know, this was just a great coach game, man. And I cannot believe I'm saying that about Gus Malzahn, man. You know, I love this offense. It was a fun offense to watch.
Now let's flip it over to the other side, Shane, because I think Jimbo Fisher's got some tough questions to answer here. Not that his team looked bad. I certainly don't think, you know, we're hitting the panic button here in College Station. They do have some tough games upcoming. But if they can limit these mistakes, I mean, the killer was coming there right after halftime. They were down 14-3. You think, all right, we get a drive here. We get a touchdown. We're right back in this game. And what happens? They fumble immediately right out of the gate. Auburn gets it and they score. And I mean, that was the game, really. So you just eliminate those type of mistakes, and I think Texas A&M can still, you know, surprise people. It's not the season's not over. It's certainly, you know, it's on the brink of disaster here because you're down in the SEC and you got Alabama upcoming here in a couple weeks. But let's kick it over to Jimbo Fisher, talking about you know, they were never able to really put Bo Nix in a tough spot. And that really cost them in this game because I thought that was going to be the game plan, and that was the Aggies' ticket to success, and they just weren't able to do it on A&M's defensive bus and where the Aggies go from here.
Coach, how do you feel like y'all did in terms of trying to deal with Bo Nix and his inexperience and things like that?
Well, I mean, we never put him in a situation where he had to depend on throwing the football and doing things as a quarterback. I mean, they did at the end, but they were able to run the ball, stay in the, as I call it, the RPO game, the little nickel and dime throws that kept a lot of pressure, and he scrambled and did a good job. And he pulled the ball and ran with his legs very good in the game. What did he throw for? I'm trying to think. But he was in 12 for 20, you know, yes. But 12 for 20, 100 yards, didn't make any mistakes. But we never, that's why I said, we let them get the lead and never put the pressure where you could get them into having to throw the football and put that pressure on. So Bo did a good job, and they did a good job of getting ahead of us and keeping the momentum of the game.
Defensively, a lot of misdirections and stuff kind of had the defense in fits. Was that mostly eye violations or is it schematic thing?
I think schematic. I mean, they do a good job. They did a couple things we hadn't seen, and then we adjusted to those and got those settled down. But that's what they do on the offense. I mean, that's their game and where they did. Like I say, yardage-wise, it wasn't drastic, but it was just key drives that they matched a bunch of plays together. And I think that's what we got to do better on offense. We're moving and doing things. We got to match more consistent plays together at times to finish drives and get more points than just the yards. And I think they did a good job of that today.
Jimbo, you said I'll get them right. What is that going to take, and what do you would that include perhaps any changes in the lineup, do you think?
We'll evaluate everything, what we're doing, how we're doing it, who's doing it, the way it's done, and we'll make those changes. Listen, those kids are playing hard, and we'll look at it, and we'll explain to them what the issues are and what we think, and we'll work together to solve them up. I try to look at the film and those things. You know, I don't want to make anything of that. But that goes on every week. Whether you win or lose, it's the same way we come back at it. We just got to keep the urgency and get better.
All right, Shane, so it's interesting. The guy that was on the hottest of hot seats, a lot of people thought, and then you got the $75 million man here, and it was the $75 million man that got out-coached in this one.
Yeah, it was, man. It really was, and I can't believe I'm saying that, Mike. I mean, I was having Gus fired here at the Ole Miss game, and it looks like he's going to win damn Coach of the Year. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, Jimbo, but the thing about Texas A&M, it's nowhere near time to hit panic. You know what I'm saying? They got a tough schedule coming up, but I wanted to ask you something about this schedule, and I don't know if this plays a role, but it's just something that's been it's been weighing on my mind, Mike. Mm-hmm. So you've got Texas A&M opening up the season against Texas State, right? Cupcake team.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, I mean, I don't know what you're really learning in that game. And then week two, you got Clemson. So it's like you went from one extreme to the other. And then you go back to Lamar. And then everything's looking great. Your team wins 62-3. You're just nothing you do is wrong. And then you go to another top 10 team. I don't like that schedule. Clemson, I know that the Clemson game brought in a lot of interest, and it was electrifying last year. It was a good game this year, but I think if you're going to play teams like that, you don't need to schedule teams like Texas State, because you ever turn the water on real hot?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And your hand is in the hot water, but then you stick it in something cold. It's just, is you with me here? It's like the water is not that cold, but it feels like it's about to freeze your hand off. You know what I'm saying? Or you could, let's flip the coin. Maybe you got your hand in something cold, and then you stick it in the hot water, and it just feels like it's boiling water. That's because you're going from one extreme to another. And I really – so I said all that to say this, Mike. I think when you go from teams like Lamar and Texas State – and then you play teams like Clemson and Auburn, I don't think your team's ready, man, because you didn't play a full game the week before. Everything you did, the blocking schemes were perfect. There was no
adversity, maybe?
Yeah, adversity, no challenges, nothing like that, you know? And then you come into a game, and then when you're hit in the face, you know, you don't know how to react. Because you didn't do this last week. Last week, everything you did was perfect. This week, you hit adversity, and you don't know how to react to it. So I don't know if the schedule has something to do with it. Maybe I'm just grasping at straws here. But that's just something that's been weighing on my mind.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because the next couple of games, Shane, Arkansas, which is obviously a down team, and then Alabama, and then down to Ole Miss. So it's just kind of the roller coaster of the Aggie season. But I think you may be onto something there, because they're struggling to get this ground game going. And when you got it going against Lamar and Texas State, you know, I don't know if that prepares you for the gauntlet that you're about to see. You know, you should have thrown in a Duke or,
yeah,
you know, a team of that, Wake Forest, something like that.
Yeah, or if you're going to do these cupcake teams, do them the first 2 weeks or something, you know, just get them out of the way, get your two wins. And that way you've got some practice, you got some repetition, and by the time you get into week three, you can ramp it up. But it's just this seesaw thing I'm sure that's playing with these guys' heads, you know. It's one thing when you're blocking a 250-pound defensive lineman, and then the next week you got – you know, a 320 dude that's coming out there killing your quarterback. You know, it's night and day.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, let's jump over to the game that we have started calling the Columbia Cup, where Missouri wins this thing, Shane. First time in a while here. They beat South Carolina 34-14. This is Barry Odom's first win over Will Muschamp. And, man, this is, again, not the game I expected. I think it was pretty obvious that Ryan Helinski was injured. That was the speculation coming out at the end of last week. And they came out and said, no, he's fine. But, I mean, my God, Shane, he wasn't terrible, but he was clearly, I don't know, he just didn't look himself. He wasn't playing like himself. And he was making some careless mistakes out there, like, This is the reason you don't want a true freshman in the SEC. And I think, obviously, the double pass, I mean, that was a terrible play. I don't know what he was thinking there. And then the game for me really came down to the pick six he threw.
Yeah.
South Carolina's about to score a touchdown. They threw an interception, returned all the way. And that was the backbreaker for South Carolina. And Man, Shane, these South Carolina fans are heated. I mean, they're hitting me up. They want Muschamp gone. They want the AD gone. They want everybody gone. Then, you know, we got to give Missouri a ton of credit here. Kelly Bryant, I mean, he just continues to progress. He looked like a machine in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how about this stat, Shane? Obviously, they got embarrassed week one against Wyoming there. They gave up 287 yards on the ground against the Cowboys. And in the three games since then, Shane, they've given up 82 yards, I think, on the ground, only 16 to South Carolina. And that's even more impressive when you realize that the Gamecocks were number three in the SEC in rushing coming into this game. And that's what did South Carolina in. They just were never able to get the ground game going. And to me, aside from the pick six and the mistakes by Helinski, that was the ball game.
This defense did a lot. Let me just say, man, there's only one game that pissed me off more than Tennessee and Florida, and it was this one because this was my $100 lock of the week. And I'm watching, and I'm like, I think that interception would have put them like within a score, if I'm not mistaken. And then all of a sudden to see that guy run all the way back for a touchdown. I mean, it was like, you know what? I am cursed, Mike. I realized right then and there. Everything I'm like the opposite of Midas. You know what I'm saying? Everything I touch turns to shit. So I'm a shyness. That's what I am. So, man, kudos to Missouri, man. You know, I want to give Kelly Bryant the praise and glory because he looked good. He looked real good. I was happy that they finally let him run the ball a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that paid off. But kudos to Missouri's defense, dude. I mean, like you said, they shut this running game down. The only person other than Muschamp on this team that I'm disappointed in is Feaster, dude. As much as we pumped him up in the offseason, like this was the missing piece. And he just cannot get anything going. Now, I don't know if that's on the offensive line or if he just cannot run. But it's like once they got away from the rushing attack,
mm-hmm.
they put it all on Helinski. And like you said, I think he was a little bit banged up, man.
Yeah, to me, I mean, it was pretty clear. And you talk about Feaster, Shane. I know South Carolina fans are not going to appreciate this stat, but he's lost more games now as a Gamecock than mm-hmm. he did in the 3 years he was at Clemson. I mean, that's god-awful. He's only been here, obviously, a couple games. But there is one bright spot here for the Gamecocks, if you want to call it that, Shane. I think Brian Edwards continues to show that his decision to come back was the right one. I mean, mm-hmm. this guy is an animal. I mean, he's faster than I thought he was. He's tougher. Yeah. He can block. He does special teams. He's clearly South Carolina's best player at this point, and I think his stock is going through the roof. He's one of the SEC's best players at this point.
Edwards is going to be one of those guys that you watch on Sunday, and you're like, I cannot believe he was on my team, and we only did this with him. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that Kamara when he was there. It's just you watch athletes like this. Like, I'm an outsider. I'm watching Edwards, and I'm like, he is a man among boys. And the fact that we can't do more with him is going to just hurt your feelings later when you're seeing him play on Sunday.
Let's kick it over to Barry Odom, Shane, because he was asked about his outstanding linebacker, Cale Garrett. He's the guy that jumped on Helinski's double pass, and it ended up being, of course, a touchdown for Missouri, and how basically no one else on the field even recognized what was going on.
Anytime that you look on the tape, you see 47 around the ball. It's the same thing he does every day in practice, and those habits continually have made him the player that he is. I guarantee it, tomorrow morning he'll be in here no later than 5:30, 5:45 tomorrow morning watching film. And that is his life. He's so driven and he's on a mission. It means so much to him to go out the right way. And he's going to do everything within his power to try to outwork the next guy.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, this is why a team like Missouri that recruits and develops these kids, and they just, you know, they may not star as freshmen. I didn't even know who this kid was when he's a freshman. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
By the time he's a senior, he's all SEC caliber. The awareness level is off the charts. And these are the type of players that Missouri relies on. And I don't know, I mean, it paid off in a big way here. And it was, I mean, it was the difference in the game here.
You know, I always liked Kale. You know, ever since he came down there in the media days, and I learned a little bit more about him down there. The main thing was, you know, this is a kid that eats, sleeps, lives football. That's it, man. He probably got like one chair in his room and a bed, you know, and like 10 alarm clocks because he ain't going to be late for film. You know, he's just one of those cats. He's got that mirror. You remember that gold mirror he has, and he's got a whole bunch of goals written on it. And that's just the kind of guy this is. And it pays off. It pays off in games like this. You know what I'm saying? I just there needs to be more players like this out there, but there's not. And you know, everybody's got a handful of them on their team, but Kale is a true leader, man, and he's helping this defense get better.
All right, Shane, well, let's flip it over to the other side of this one, the guy that not very popular in the other Columbia at this moment, but Will Muschamp was asked repeatedly about Ryan Helinski's health and on how the fact that the Gamecocks never got the ground game going. And I've got a comment on here on the other side here.
Well, I mean, he had some soreness in his elbow this week, and we didn't throw him on Wednesday. But, you know, again, we'll go back and evaluate. I mean, certainly he would not have played if he was hurt. So he was not hurt. And we'll go back and evaluate the things we got to do. We didn't help Ryan today much. I mean, we didn't get anything in the run game. There was a lot of pressure, whether it was four or five-man pressures that they brought. We didn't do a lot to help Ryan, and that's the disappointing part of that. Caron came in and did some nice things, and we'll continue to evaluate what we need to do moving forward. But he didn't throw on Wednesday, just had some soreness, and he would not have played if he was hurt. And so he was cleared by our medical staff. Well, we just need to do what's best for our team right now, and then number one, what's best for Ryan's health. We'll evaluate that. Again, the elbow was never brought up on the sideline today about anything as far as that was concerned. Well, we felt like we had some good things in the run game going that we just obviously got whipped. I mean, John, we didn't have anything get anything going in the run game going. We wanted to create some shots down the field off the run game, which, well, we never really got to the run game to become much of a threat in the game in the first half. Field position was a killer. I mean, we were backed up, and obviously I felt like we were playing pretty well that time defensively. Just certainly didn't want to make a mistake backed up. So came out in the second half, and I thought we did a much better job of moving the football and identifying some things that we could do. But going in the game, we felt like we'd be able to run the football, and we weren't able to do it at all.
It seemed like
a poor game. Sure. I think Ryan will respond fine. He's extremely bright. He's extremely intelligent. He's got a lot of confidence, and this is part of being, you know, the quarterback at South Carolina. It's part of being a quarterback in the SEC. It's not all going to be perfect, and it's tough, and we can't put him in tough situations, especially in that first half. We've got to find some ways to run the football and take some pressure off him in these situations, and we did not.
You think he maintained that throughout the game as much as he was getting hit?
Yeah, I thought he continued to battle and fight and be who he is, and so we got to continue to support him.
All right, Chad, I see. You know, I had basically the same idea, it sounds like, that the Gamecocks did coming into this one. You know, you got to get you lean on your ground game, help the freshman out. But it's kind of troubling to me the fact that he notes that and then he says, well, we just couldn't get it going. And then, I mean, you gotta have to adjust. You have to have a plan B. You have to, I don't know. And then it's his defense that is kind of continuing to fail. And I'm not advocating that he's fired this week or anything, or even that he should be fired by the end of the season. But I don't know. If I'm a South Carolina fan, I understand why they're kind of puzzled by just his comments and where the direction of this team right now.
Yeah, no, I'm frustrated because they have the weapons. Now, Shy got a little banged up in this game, you know, but after Edwards scored that long touchdown, that, what was it, like 80-yard touchdown, and they brought it within three,
mm-hmm.
It just felt like they, okay, everything's settling back down. We're going to have plenty of opportunities. And then Missouri comes back, right back out, and goes all the way down the field and scores a touchdown. It's like they didn't have an answer for anything on both sides of the balls. It's not just offense. It was defense, man. It was special teams. It was everything, man. They just could not they didn't have an answer for anything.
Now, a lot of people, Shane, I don't know if you've heard this chatter yet. I know you've been busy working, but South Carolina, next week, plays Kentucky. They've yet to beat Kentucky under Will Muschamp, and the losing streak goes longer than his tenure there. I know I keep saying I wouldn't fire him, but is this the biggest game of his coaching career at South Carolina? I mean, I guess a Kentucky team that's coming off two losses. I mean, I just don't know if the Gamecocks can afford to lose this one.
It is, Mike. You know, Helinski bought Muschamp time.
2 weeks, maybe.
It did. It bought him some time. It got him through Bama. Nobody was expecting them to win, you know. I'm sure there was a few that were trying to be optimistic about it, you know. But then you go to Missouri. This is a game you got to win. I mean, we talked about how pivotal this situation was. And it wasn't the fact that they lost. It's the fact that they just got beat down there at the end. So now you got a Kentucky team that has lost two games, that's just as depressed as you are. And if Kentucky gets their shit together and comes out there and beats you, yeah, I'd say that seat got real hot real fast. And don't think they ain't already got some plans moving around, because like I said in the offseason, South Carolina has spent a lot of money on football, a lot more than they're used to. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This isn't a program that just throws money out at football like the Georgias and Alabamas and Tennessees. They don't do that. And the fact that they bought in, put all this money in the facilities and to help with recruiting, to get this team as close to these other programs as possible, and you're taking steps back on year four, yeah, I think he is on a hot seat, Mike. And they've got – it would not surprise me if Kentucky comes out and wins this thing that we start hearing those little whispers that Muschamp's probably not going to be there the next couple of weeks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you're right there. All right, Shane, I held this one off as far as I can.
Golly, I knew it was coming.
We got to get to it here. Florida defending the home turf there against Tennessee. And this one was never in doubt, Shane. 34-3, Tennessee goes down once again. Man, I just don't know what to say. We both thought this would be a better contested game. Tennessee was coming off that, yes, it was Chattanooga, but they seem to kind of be trending in the right direction at least. Florida, imagine what happened, how bad Florida would win this game if Franks played, if CJ Henderson played, if Zuniga played. In the end, Shane, I think the difference was old Kyle Trask's mom.
Jeez, oh my God. I knew this was going to be a doozy right there on that opening drive, man. You know, I do this every year. I talk myself up. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, we've been bad for 10 years, but, you know, we're due. Just like my gambling, you know, it just felt like this is going to be the day. It's a noon game. I'm using noon like it's a privilege, you know. Like, we played at 12. Florida's never done that before. You know what I'm saying? So they got a new quarterback, you know. But there was times in this game we had an opportunity, maybe not to win, but definitely make it a competitive ball game. You know what I'm saying? Florida should be pissed that they did not win by 60. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they could come away from this game. I know they're happy they got the victory, but there were some things in there that you cannot be happy about if you're a Florida fan. So that's me trying to defend Tennessee and push everything on Florida. But
seven turnovers in this was a sloppy-ass game, Shane. Oh,
very, very sloppy. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is, Mike, we don't have a quarterback. You know, and I tried to take the high road with Garantano, but I can't do it anymore. He's not the guy. He is not the guy. The guy went 10 for 17, 107 yards, two picks. And then when he did run this number one dual threat in 2016 recruiting class, he got 6 yards, Mike, 6 freaking yards. He's averaging a yard a pop. And we're wondering why we can't win ball games. You know, and it's like, okay, we got Gray out there. We got some of this youth out there. You know, you see Henry Toto. How can you say his name? Toto or whatever. You know, you see all these freshmen playing and all these sophomores. And it's like, you know what? Okay, let's embrace the youth. Let's have something to look forward to. You know, we don't have that. We have Garantano. He's a junior. He's coming back, you know? So it's like,
he's not going to the NFL.
No, no. And the Mets ain't calling. They don't want him to play up there. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, it's just sad. And then a lot of people were getting on to my boy Marr when he came in. Brian?
Uh-huh.
And, okay, yeah. Did he have a great game? No. But he at least stretched the field. He at least threw the ball down the field. He wasn't doing these little two-yard outside whatever plays, you know, just down the sideline. I mean, when Garantano, half of his passes went for either 1 yard or -3. And if they didn't catch it, it was a fumble, and we had to worry about it. You know what I'm saying?
Tennessee needs to remove the swing pass from the playbook. I don't understand why they keep running that one. But
give it up already. They've got it figured out. We have no running game. Ty Chandler couldn't get anything going. Gray, bless his heart, had one nice little 16-yard scamper. But other than that, he couldn't do anything. This team's a mess, man. Juwan Jennings looked human. He dropped a pass in the end zone that got picked off. So it was just, there was a whole bunch of things that went wrong in this game. And I'm not happy with it, Mike. You know, I'm not out on Pruitt. I want to make this point. I'm not out on Pruitt. I really do think that I haven't given enough time yet. You know what I'm saying? This is year two. This isn't a must-champ situation. This isn't a four-year program. You know, this is – he doesn't even have his guy. He's trying to get his guys in there now, you know. And so I don't want to judge him. But I am judging some of the coaches for the play calling. I mean, here we wanted old Chaney up here. And like you said, these little swing passes. And if Garantano cannot throw the ball 10 yards down the field – then don't put him in there. I would rather have Brian in there slinging it. And if it gets picked off, so what? You know, it's better than going three and out and having to punt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's little things like that drove me nuts. The wide open pass. Oh, my God. Did you see how wide open the tight end was there? You know, there was nobody within 20 yards. And I was like, well, maybe he had some pressure on him, Mike, you know. So I watched the replay like 10 times. I'm like, maybe there's an angle I'm not missing, you know. And so I looked at different camera angles. I said, you know, nope, he just missed a wide open man. Here's a guy that's got a free ride scholarship to the University of Tennessee and cannot hit the largest tight end in the league down the sideline. You know what I'm saying? It's the craziest. That's where we're at now as Tennessee. We're a laughingstock, but I'm not that upset, Mike. I'm really not. Okay. Mm-hmm. Georgia State hurt me. Okay. BYU made me upset. Florida, you know what? After three losses, I'm just like, you know what? I'm embracing the youth movement. But if they roll out Garantano next week, I'm out, man. I am going to be upset because he's not it. He can't do it.
Well, Shane, you said a lot there. I don't think you mentioned Florida one time, so let's get some thoughts on them real quick. I think we got to give – I joked around about Kyle Trask's mom. They showed her six times on the opening drive. But he had a hell of a game outside of his two interceptions. And, I mean, leave it to the Tennessee defense to make this guy look like an All-American in his first start since his high school freshman season. But, I mean, he looked terrific. I thought the receivers looked really good from Florida. The defense obviously, you know, clamped down, although don't really know how much Tennessee, you know, how much competitiveness they were getting from the Vols. But one concern I did have in this one, Shane, and this is, you know, just a growing theme, but Florida's offensive line unable to push around Tennessee's defensive line. P. Ryan didn't really get going at once again. I mean, I'm kind of shaking my head at how Florida's going to do when they play teams like Auburn coming up here. And I know they got Towson this week. HBO and Towson are coming to town, so that's not going to be a challenge. But I'm a little concerned with the ground game. And like you said, Florida probably should have won this game by 50. I thought Dan Mullen got a little cute here with his quarterback rotation. Trask was firing on all cylinders. They bring in Emory Jones, and he's doing nothing out there. I have no idea what he was doing there unless he was just treating this as a damn scrimmage game.
All right, I'm putting my neutral hat back on, Mike. All right, Emory should not be on the field, period. I'm with you there. Trask,
I remember Dan Mullen said he's further than Tebow. Remember that, saying all that?
No, he needs to be out there with Tebow up in New York somewhere. He doesn't need to be out in this field, you know what I'm saying? Because Trask is it, man. Trask is your team right now. He's doing great. He's done this 2 weeks in a row. Why are you going to rattle his confidence? Here you were worried about Franks this whole time, and now you want to start a quarterback controversy? That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen or heard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Trask looked good. And when we did get pressure on, he still found ways to find a completion. I mean, he's good, man. He's a big-bodied, physical quarterback that shockingly has a little mobility to him. So I want to keep growing off that, but I am concerned about Florida moving forward with this offensive line. You know, they're good with pass blocking, but they should be getting more out of their rushing attack. You know what I'm saying? Especially in a game like this, when they could do nothing wrong. I mean, we started playing back on our heels. Tennessee did.
Mm-hmm.
And they still could not get a running game going. That blew my mind. It's not like Tennessee is just, you know, God's gift to rush defense either. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, let's move on, Shane, before you do any more ranting here. Go to Mississippi State, where the Bulldogs, big win here over Kentucky, Shane. We both thought Kentucky was going to win this game outright. Mississippi State dominated this one, 28-13. And I got to give a ton of credit here, Shane, to Garrett Schrader. I know it was a little bit tough on him last week when he was kind of thrown into the action there, and I didn't quite think he played up to the talk there in the Kansas State game, but he had a hell of a game, Shane. I know his numbers are not blown away, but, I mean, he had 125 on the ground, 180 through the air. I thought we also got to give a ton of credit to Joe Moorhead, I think, because a lot of his passes were to tight ends or running backs, he was just setting him up with some really easy throws. And I think that's what you got to do with a freshman quarterback. And he made Garrett Schrader look fantastic. Kylan Hill, of course, carried the day here. 120 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, he just went beast mode again. My favorite run of the day was him jumping from about the 5-yard line into the end zone. I mean, that was incredible. And on the flip side, Shane, I mean, Sawyer Smith, we're starting to see maybe why he was at Troy there. I don't know what happened to the guy we saw in the first half there against Florida, but he's kind of come back down to earth. And outside of A.J. Rose, Shane, I mean, this Kentucky team, Lynn Bowden, they targeted him 16 times. He was basically the offense along with Rose, but Bowden also had some big drops in this one. And, man, Kentucky, I feel like kind of laid an egg, but at the same time, got to give Mississippi State a ton of credit. I know they lost last week to Kansas State, but they're 1-0 in the SEC. They got to be feeling good about that.
Yeah, yeah. I think Mississippi State looked pretty damn good, buddy. And I've heard a lot of nicknames with Schrader. Have you heard that? There's Darth Schrader. That was one.
the bearded Schrader.
That one's ours. I like that one the most right now. But you know what, man? I told you this kid is legit. And given some more opportunities, I think this is our quarterback, man. And Mississippi State's found one early, and they got plenty of years with him. So I like that.
You wouldn't be playing him over Tommy Stevens, would you?
Yeah, I would, Mike.
I'm still in the Tommy Stevens camp as long as he's healthy, because I think with the fact that you got Kylan Hill, I think you were about to say, you know, incredible running back.
Yeah.
You need to be able to have that ability to push the ball down the field. And not saying Garrett Schrader doesn't have it, but Tommy Stevens, from the limited action we've seen, I mean, he just completely changes this Mississippi State offense and just his ability to get the ball to these receivers. I just think it makes Mississippi State incredibly dangerous, that I don't know if Schrader's quite there just yet, but you may be right, Shane. I mean, if the ceiling is obviously higher with Garrett Schrader, he's a freshman. I mean, he may be twice as good as he is now by season's end if they stick with him.
Absolutely. That's what I'm thinking, man. And this is something to I don't know, just going off Joe's offense from last year, you know, Nick was fantastic when it did come in the running game. But if you have that and the ability to throw, and Schrader, I think, is way much better than Nick was last year at throwing the ball. And, hell, I think Schrader's better at running the ball. You know what I'm saying? I just think he fits Joe's scheme. Now, I'm with you. Old touchdown Tommy. I like the kid. I really do. But I'm just sold on this guy, man. I don't know what it is. It's just I see the future with Mississippi State here. And that's what Joe's selling to his team. You know, they're 3-1 right now. They've got a good start to the season. Let's keep building it, man. Let's build around this youth, because that's what we got to create down there, is this youth movement so that you can get some more recruits down there. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of the ball, Kentucky, man, I say what you want. This was a hangover, man. These guys are upset. They lost to Florida last week, and they brought it all the way down to Mississippi State. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So they got away from their identity. They got away from the as far as the rushing attempts, the offensive line. I mean, it was night and day. And I don't think that they just all of a sudden got worse, or that Florida maybe wasn't as good as we thought. I think Kentucky has great linemen and line play, and they just could not get anything going against Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, it was just – well, let's jump to that. Let's just jump to Mark Stoops talking about basically the egg his team laid here. And he said he didn't see it coming following the week of practice. And he was also asked, Shane, about Cash Daniel. So we got to hit on that, too. I wanted to just include this because he kind of does a 180 here, and I think that was the right move by Stoops.
Is it that simple, or is there other stuff going on?
No, I don't think it's that simple. I really don't. I really do feel like, you know, we've had that before. You know, it can happen, I think, later in the year. You know, these guys are young men, and you know, they got a lot in their tank, and we need to regroup. You know, I think it was a situation where I got to do a better job of getting them ready to play. Our coaches, you know, have to get them ready, and I think, you know, you take an inexperienced team in certain positions on the road in a hostile environment, and we weren't up for the challenge. So that's on all of us. But I don't think it's as simple as just having a hangover. I really don't. I just think it's a mentality that you have to have, and you have to be a good football team to go on the road in a playing environment like this and win. And we didn't have that today.
What was
so?
You said you talked to the SEC office about Cash this week. Was it your call or theirs to hold him out?
Yeah. So with Cash's situation, after that second viewing came out and looking at that again, because obviously that was a little different view than early. We all felt like I just talked to Cash and myself and Cash, you know, we have great respect for this game and we're going to honor the game and do things as good as we possibly can. And that was 100% on my call to not have him be a captain and not have him play to start the game. I know you're going to open yourself up to more or less or anything else, but believe me, I try to do things right. I'm not perfect, and we try to respect the game, and our players are going to respect the game and respect people and compete, and it's an emotional game. I'd like to just leave it at that.
All right, Shane, one of the funniest things I thought from Saturday, off the field, obviously, the ESPN announcers calling this game, you know, they were just like baffled that Cash Daniel wasn't in the game. They were, why isn't he playing Cash? I was like, how do you not follow the news? But I just thought that was interesting here. And Mark Stoops kind of admitted once he saw that second angle of the video that you and I, you know, discussed at length last week, kind of had to sit Cash. Just felt that was the right thing to do. And I think that was at least credit Mark Stoops for kind of coming out and changing his mind there, I think.
Do you think that was enough, though?
I mean, no. I mean, he should have sat for the whole game, probably, but...
Yeah, I think so, too. Maybe not even travel with the team. That was really bad, and I don't want to go down that road because we hit that last week. But, you know, Kentucky's got a good ball club, man. They really do. And top to bottom, they got balance. But Smith has got to get his confidence back, man, because it was just not there. And I don't know if it was because it was a away game here, the cowbells were getting to him or something like that, but it just seems like there wasn't enough plays called to get him comfortable. And the whole game he played just, I don't know, like he was on his heels, and he just couldn't get it going.
And we talked about already how big this game next week, Kentucky-South Carolina, is for the Gamecocks. It's huge for Kentucky because the loser of this game is probably going to go spiral down the SEC cellar. They may not be heard from again if they lose next weekend.
For sure, man.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Nashville, where LSU, huge win here over Vanderbilt. This is a wild game, 66-38. How about this stat, Shane? I don't have the number in front of me, but LSU has scored more points after four games than any team in SEC history. I think it's like 237, something insane. But, I mean, remember last year, I mean, they're getting shut out against Alabama. So, night and day different. I mean, Joe Burrow firing all cylinders, nearly 400 yards passing, six touchdowns, no interceptions. And, yeah, I know this was just a wild game back and forth of Vanderbilt scored two defensive touchdowns. LSU scored a defensive touchdown. LSU scored on special teams. They're rushing it through the – Elair had a hell of a game. And I don't know. This was like Big 12 football here, Shane. And I was all for it. This was the most fun noon game of the day.
Yeah, and at the time I was excited because it's a part of my parlay, you know. And I was like, it's going to be a good day, buddy. I got LSU with the spread. But then Vanderbilt just kept – nickel and dime and finally got back into this thing. I mean, the fact that Vanderbilt got 38 points against LSU, 38 points. Mm-hmm. Think about that. If Vandy scores 38 points every single game, man, they're a 9-3 ball club at the end of the year. So kudos to Vandy for getting Vaughn involved. Lipscomb. I know everybody wants to talk about Joe. Joe did fantastic. Don't get me wrong, but we expected that. We expected these receivers. I think Chase, man, I tell you what, he goes home, he can get whatever he wants. He can eat at any restaurant he wants. I mean, that's a gem right there, buddy. Chase, I mean, he's
10 catches, 229 yards, four touchdowns. That's a season for a lot of LSU receivers in the past. You know what?
Seriously, man. I mean, this kid should get whatever he wants when he gets back home. So this team is legit, man. I'm kind of worried about their defense, though. I cannot believe they let up 38 points against Vandy.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of like I said, I don't know how much you buy into this, but two of the scores were on defense. Vanderbilt's defense scored it, so you can't put that on LSU. But
yeah.
I don't know. It was just a wild, wide-open game. And when you're scoring at a clip like this, you just put your defense out there so much. I think they get a little tired. They were still making big stops in the game.
That's true.
I don't know. I know a lot of people kept hitting me up with that. Why I got LSU number one with Vanderbilt scoring this many, but I don't know. They had 59 points with about 9 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, they could have scored 80 or 90. I mean, this is LSU football now. They basically just score as many as they want, and they're going to surrender some big plays too. Their defense is going to get worn out, but I don't think they care because they're just going to keep scoring. So I don't know. It's a wild atmosphere there at in Baton Rouge now with this offense. I thought the offense would be all right, but I never saw this one coming, Shane. And this was another game where Vanderbilt was taking over, their home crowd taking over the LSU fans. And I don't know if you saw this one, Shane, but there's a bar right near the stadium there, and apparently they ran out of vodka by 9 a.m. because all these damn LSU fans. And that's something Coach O and Joe Burrow spoke upon after this game, just how many damn LSU fans showed up for this away game in Nashville.
Probably 25. That was like crazy to see. Usually, I don't know, in usual conference away games, they usually don't give us that many tickets. So I don't know how they got them, but I was happy to see them show up. That was crazy.
Seemed like 31,000. For sure. I was so happy when we came through our Tiger Walk on the road. I mean, the guys were waiting for us. It meant a lot to us. And when they started screaming LSU, it seemed like we took over the stadium. I was proud of our fan base. I'm glad they showed up for us today.
Probably 32,000, no doubt. We had a huge LSU chant go on. I mean, and literally the whole stadium was chanting LSU. I mean, it was pretty much unbelievable.
Had to be 30,000. You know, I feel like we took over the place. That was our goal. We took over, and a great win.
All right, Shane. So LSU, I mean, they're appreciating these fans coming out on the road at Vanderbilt, taken over once again by an opposing SEC fan base, and that's got to be pretty demoralizing if you're a Commodore.
Yeah, it's Vandy. I mean, that's kind of what they do, you know. We always joked about it being a home game, so it just sucks because Vanderbilt's such an – I mean, Nashville's such a cool town, dude. I really wish if Vandy would put more into their program, it really could be something special. I mean, if they really committed, built a stadium, got a coach in there nothing against Mason. I think he's a great person for that job. But, you know, you pay some money and you get a head coach in there. I mean, who knows, man? You get the facilities. Vanderbilt could honestly be a powerhouse with Nashville being right there. But that's not them. I don't know if they'll ever be that way. Hopefully not my lifetime. I don't want to compete with another Georgia, you know. But I something I was thinking about earlier is when you were talking about this offense and LSU's defense. I want you to hear this. I'm just going to read the time of possession on the first few touchdowns that LSU had. First touchdown, minute 13. Second touchdown, 11 seconds. Third touchdown, a minute 56. Fourth touchdown, a minute 15. You know, so this defense, you're right, dude. I mean, after a while, your offense scoring so quick. I mean, it's almost like that three and out because you're going to be exhausted there at the end of the day. So do you think LSU's equipped to do this against teams like Alabama and Auburn?
I think so. I mean, they just did it against Texas. They did it. I know Vanderbilt's down as an SEC team, but I've not seen any indication they're slowing down. I mean, they basically are doing whatever they want to people, and I don't see it slowing down.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it just blows my mind. I'm looking at it. These guys literally, when they score, and it's 2 minutes, 2 minutes or less, they're in the end zone. So, of course, this is against Vandy, but I mean, that's new LSU. It's going to take a while to get used to, brother.
All right, Shane, let's jump to, I think, the biggest heartbreak here of the day. Terrible loss here. Let's jump to Arkansas, where the Razorbacks somehow find a way to lose to San Jose State 31-24. Josh Love, the San Jose quarterback, Shane, they said on the broadcast he's a former walk-on. He had 402 yards passing. And just the stats to come out of this game, and I'm not even talking about the football game really, Shane, but they were just completely bizarre. Like, check this one out. Chad Morris now 1-2 against the Mountain West as Arkansas's coach. You just can't have that. San Jose State was paid $1.5 million for this game. They come and hand Arkansas a loss. And how about this one, Shane? I'm going to read you. This is every single drive Arkansas had last night. I'm going to tell you how many plays it had and the result. 3 plays, punt. 10 plays, turnover on downs. 4 plays, touchdown. 3 plays, interception. 14 plays, turnover on downs. 3 plays, punt. 6 plays, interception. 7 plays, interception. 6 plays, field goal. 9 plays, touchdown. 3 plays, punt. 7 plays, touchdown. And then 1 play, interception. I mean, what in the hell is going on here with Arkansas? They threw 5 interceptions in this game. That's how they lost it. And, oh, man, Shane, and how about this? This is even worse. It's not like this is a good San Jose State team. With this win, the San Jose State coach, his record, he improved it with this one. He's 5-23 as San Jose State's coach.
Oh, God.
I'm like speechless here.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Arkansas, I feel for you, buddy. I really do. Because I'm there. I get you. If anybody understands Arkansas, it's a Tennessee fan. San Jose State is not only a bad team, they're a horrible team. This should not even have been close to being a ball game. And the fact that they not only kept it close, but ended up winning this thing is just an absolute, I mean, it's a joke. And I'm out on Morris. I told you this. I was hanging on, man. They were getting me back in there at the end of last week, you know, and let's not forget they had to score there at the very end to win that damn game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just the Dub Club, all that stuff, all that. I mean, it's like Butch Jones-esque, you know, just the stuff that's coming out of his mouth. And I don't know, man. Where do you go from here, dude? You know? There's no reason you should have lost this game. There's no reason this should even been close to being a ball game. And the fact that they won just it blows my mind. They took a step forward last week. They took 10 steps back this week. Arkansas is going in the wrong direction. And I think we may have seen at this moment, I think we've seen Arkansas's last win.
I mean, I don't know if I can argue with that at this point, but the silver lining here, Shane.
There's silver lining?
I mean, the quarterback threw five interceptions. You're never going to win a game like that. If he doesn't throw these, I mean, they may have won this one. I mean, they stormed all the way back. They shut him down in the second half. Still found a way to lose. They come storming back. It kind of looked like Arkansas was going to win this game. They gave up the final touchdown there to San Jose State, and obviously that was the difference. But I don't know, Shane. I mean,
what about Chavis, man? You know, I love the Chief. Don't get me wrong. But this defense had no answer for San Jose State, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even that last series, after they finally came back, they finally tied this thing up, and San Jose goes out there and looks like, you know, like New England Patriots there, you know? Just go nickel and dime, look like Tom Brady throwing out there for a second. And it's just, you know, the talent is you know, Arkansas is not the most talented team right now. They've got a lot of youth on that ball club. They're going to get better, but their talent is far beyond superior to San Jose State. You know what I'm saying? They had no answer for this team there at the end. And I don't know. I don't know where you go. I think Coach fires somebody. It wouldn't surprise me because when you listen to him talk and everything I've heard from him since this game makes me feel like he's ready to blame somebody, and it sure ain't himself.
Yeah, so let's jump to Chad Morris. You're going to hear a lot of unacceptable, but that was kind of the theme here in the presser. It seems like we've heard this about six times during his tenure already.
First of all, I want to credit San Jose State and Coach Brennan. His guys outplayed us. They outcoached us. And it was very, very disappointing in the effort that we got tonight. For three quarters, they were the SEC football team. They took it to us, and from the very first play, they had us on our heels. Very disappointing, extremely disappointing. We had great fight to come back and tie the game, and then we let them go down the field and score on us. Again, we couldn't hold any momentum. But credit those guys. Everyone's going to be held accountable from me down. I'm going to hold every coach. I'm going to hold every player. Every staff member is going to be held accountable. Totally unacceptable. We're going to get back in here tomorrow. We'll figure it out. And this performance is completely unacceptable. You get what you deserve in life. We didn't deserve to win this football game. Anytime you have five turnovers and you allow a guy to throw for over 400 yards on you and go down the field on you like nothing, missed tackles, unacceptable, completely unacceptable. And, you know, I have an opportunity to capture some momentum at home. And you got fourth down, fourth and short, and on a couple occasions, and we can't convert fourth and short. So unacceptable. And just very disappointed. They outplayed us, and we'll give those guys credit. This will be a defining moment for this football team this week and moving forward. Well, first of all, I was very disappointed in our lack of short yardage conversion that stalled drives. And, yeah, that's a gut check is what that is. That's all that is. And so it starts right there. You know, regardless of running the football or not, I mean, we got to be able to knock the pile back and keep drives going. When we go for it on fourth down, which is that's who we are, we're going to be aggressive. We got to be able to get it. And we didn't get it. Credit those guys.
All right, Shane, so at least he was showing some passion. I don't know what good that does him, but I don't know. I mean, he's fired up. Somebody, they've got to respond here next week. They're playing Texas A&M, who's also coming off a loss, so they're a little down themselves, but they've got to show some fight next week or things could get pretty ugly here.
Things are ugly, man. Stuff I'm reading. I'm not down there in Arkansas. You know what I'm saying? But I love Arkansas fans. I think they deserve better, man. They really do. The amount of time. I mean, Arkansas back in its prime. You know what I'm saying? They're a lot like Tennessee, honestly. If you really think about it, they're like Tennessee in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. And then they slowly drifted away from that. And then they got a little flare of something good. Then Bobby wrecks his Harley and the things just, you know. But they've waited, man. They put their time in. They got behind Brett when he was down there. Now they're behind Morris. And it just seems like they deserve better when it comes to coaching. And the thing that drives me nuts, okay, Arkansas's got money. Money's not an issue down there. And they go out and get Coach Morris that has – I don't even think he's ever had a winning record. You know what I'm saying?
No, he hasn't.
It's kind of like when we went down there and got Dooley. It's just Arkansas could attract better coaches than Morris. But for some reason, they went this route. And so I was like, okay, let's give it a chance. Last year, I get it. You're a new coach, your new system, you're switching everything over. But year two is almost as bad as Pruitt, man. They're not going anywhere. And I'm not seeing any type of development throughout the season here. So I don't want to bury him. I don't want to get on another rant. But I don't know. I'm lost words for what's going on in that situation.
I think if you're a Razorback fan, Shane, the best you can hope for at this point, let him keep recruiting. You know, it seems like he's doing a solid job there. And then the next coach inherits some talent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about all I got right now. All right, Shane, let's hit on this. This was a heartbreaker. Let's hit on these quick. But Ole Miss falls to Cal 28-20. A controversial play here, Shane, and adding insult to injury. Matt Corral hurt. He could not finish the game. And John Reese Plumlee came in. He looked actually really good, the freshman quarterback. But, man, I don't understand how this happened. Ole Miss defense starting to break down here. But, of course, the key of the game here was that final play. For anyone that didn't see it, Ole Miss out of timeouts. They're driving the length of the field. They threw a pass that looked like a touchdown. I don't understand how it wasn't called a touchdown. Yeah. The receiver basically caught it in the end zone. It was falling towards the play of field and landed at about the half-yard line, and that's where they spotted it for some reason. No timeouts. No one challenged it. And Ole Miss ran up to the ball, and you know, there was 1 second left. They had to do something because no one was stopping the game. They ran a sneak, and they got stuffed. It was just they didn't even really get a full play, it didn't seem like. It was just a mass of confusion, and they got stuffed there at the goal line, so they lose by a touchdown. What were your thoughts when this played out, Shane?
Dude, if quarterback gets hit, we'll spend 10 minutes watching that to see if it was a targeting call. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is the game. Everybody's watching this. There's no accidents or anything like that. You've got a wide receiver that caught the ball with his feet in the goal inside the end zone. We don't know where the ball's at. It was the way the camera angle was, but they got plenty of cameras there to look at this, and they did not take 1 second to pause and take a look at this thing. You know what I'm saying? This is the game is on the line, and honestly, Ole Miss got screwed because if they would have saw the film and they said there's not enough evidence, they would have had a play, man. They wouldn't have done that stupid quarterback sneak thing they did there at the end. They should have tied this. It was to tie it up, right?
They would have needed the 2-point conversion as well, but they would have.
Yeah,
it would have given them an opportunity. And man, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I'm pretty pissed here because, like you said, I think it was a touchdown. I certainly think it was.
But I thought it was a touchdown,
but it maybe not definitive, but that's why we got this replay. This is the reason, not for, you know, did he get his feet in bounds in the first quarter with 9 minutes left that they're always stopping for this shit. You know, this is what you have replay for, is for the game on the line. the game is, you know, the play at the goal line. And Matt Luke, I mean, he was pretty fired up after this one. I don't blame him.
Matt, just to start, your thoughts on those final two plays down at the goal line and how you thought it was handled.
Yeah, I thought at the very least that they're supposed to review every single play. At the very least, I thought it should have been buzzed and been reviewed. But it's fourth down, so you can't wait. You got to get the next play called. And but I did think at the very least it could have been buzzed and looked at. But we didn't have a timeout and couldn't spike it. So the you know, our only option was to do the quarterback sneak and get the ball off.
Matt, did you get an explanation from the officials or anyone as to why the second to last play wasn't reviewed? Do you anticipate getting one?
No, all I was told is, you know, the ball was snapped, so we couldn't look at it. And I thought that it was supposed to be looked at and thought it would be buzzed, especially something that close and definitely not on the one-yard line.
All right, Shane. I mean, he's no explanation.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm pretty pissed off if I'm an Ole Miss fan, like I said, and there's just no excuse. So, I mean, we've come – this is 2019, man. We need to – you can't make mistakes like this.
You can't, man. And especially when jobs are on the line, man. You know, think about that for a second. Matt Luke, I love Luke. I love what he's doing with Ole Miss. I love, you know, we heard the clip, you know, this week. You know, he's just fired up, man. He loves Ole Miss football. But he's got a little heat coming on him. And if Ole Miss doesn't have a fantastic season or a good season, then who knows? He could be on the chopping block. So a little play like this may not mean much to a ref, but it could mean the world to Coach Luke at the end of the season when they're trying to get into a bowl game. You know, I mean, it's just, we're talking millions of dollars on the line off of one play that could have changed the outlook if you would have gave it 20 seconds to look and make sure either A, did he have the touchdown, or B, did he not. And it's the fact that they didn't do it is just, I'd be upset too, man.
They've got to win three conference games now to make a bowl instead of two. And that, I mean, that's huge. That's a big difference.
Absolutely.
All right, Shane, last game. We hit on this one real quick because it wasn't that exciting, to be honest with you. But Alabama beats the hell out of Southern Miss 49-7. And, I mean, this this one was basically over. 1 minute, the first drive took 54 yards, took them a minute 13. The next drive, Shane, went 91 yards in 59 seconds. Then they went 91 yards in five minutes. And then they went 56 yards in a minute and a half. And that, I mean, it was over at the first one, but it was really over after that fourth consecutive touchdown drive.
Yeah, it was. This was not even a game. I watched the first quarter, and I was done with this thing.
Well,
I mean, seriously, I mean, it's nothing against Alabama, but this was another tune-up game, you know. Mm-hmm. I watched every second of the South Carolina-Alabama game, but this one, when I realized that kick returner wasn't going to do anything for Southern Miss, I said, you know what, this isn't fun. I'm not going to watch it anymore. So,
Tua had five touchdowns, Shane, I think one away from the school record. Should Alabama keep him in to break the record at some point, or –
maybe. I don't know. How do you think Saban feels about records? Do you think he cares? I don't think he cares. I think he cares about his records. But yeah. I don't think he cares about players on his team's records.
Yeah, no, you're probably right, Shane. All right, Shane, this was an incredibly long episode. I think that's going to do it for this one. You got anything before we hop off here?
Yeah, I just, again, Arkansas, hang in there, okay? It usually takes three losses to get numb, you know, and so just hang in there. You got one more coming, and after that, I think you'll feel a lot better about the future of your program, which is bright. You've got a lot of young talent. South Carolina, I apologize for putting money on you. Missouri, you're welcome. That's pretty much it. Florida can go to hell. Just kidding. That's it, Mike. That's all I got. This thing's, I'm done. Throw balls.
All right, that's going to do it for this one, Shane. Thank you for joining me. As always, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
Deuces. One second, Mike. We got the lane train coming through. You know, one of these days I'm going to be moving away from these tracks.
As soon as you hit that $100 bet.
I'm going to be on the other side, baby. Oh, man. All right, just give it one more. It's pretty bad when you know how many blows it's got left. I don't know why I can't sleep at night, you know? I just feel like I don't get any rest anymore. All right. I think we're good.